James Breslow on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
And welcome back, everyone, to the final hour of the James Breslow Show, final hour of the day, final hour of the week, and we save the best for last. We've got General Paul Vallelee joining us today, chairman of the Stand Up America U.S. Foundation, incredible war record, great American, here to raise some serious concerns about what's going on in our military these days, and in particular in the academies, including West Point. So looking forward to our interview with the general. My take on the news, the big news today, of course, the overturning of Roe v. Wade by the Dobbs v. Jackson opinion. And I just think it's important to point out what genuine heroes these justices are that sided with the majority on this, because they knew the personal risk that they were taking. And we have seen it already with the attempted assassination of Justice Kavanaugh. I mean, they very easily could have taken the easy route on this. They took the very difficult route. And anyone who reads the opinion in a dispassioned way, putting your personal feelings about abortion to the side. In the prior hour, I told you, I think that abortion should be legal in a very limited fashion. But I nonetheless agree with this opinion. It was a very thorough analysis, a correct analysis. Yes, Roe v. Wade has been around for 50 years, but Roe v. Wade was wrongly decided. And Roe v. Wade was not around for the prior 150 years. So it was a new interpretation of the Constitution, finding substantive rights in the Due Process Clause, and specifically this right to privacy. As I also pointed out, this ruling is not a conservative ruling. The left actually should like this ruling. This gives more power to the government. It says there aren't as many rights in the Constitution as we might want to think. There's the Bill of Rights. Those rights are all very specific. But the idea that there's this other body of rights that the founders had in mind but just forgot to put in the Bill of Rights, these justices said, no, I'm sorry, we can't read into the Constitution additional rights as much as we would like to. It was a leftist court at the time of Roe v. Wade, and they wanted to see additional rights in the Constitution so that the people could not make their own laws limiting abortion. So they just decided to read into the Constitution some rights that were not there. And these justices are simply righting that ship, but kudos to them to have the courage to do it. And of course, because of the leaked opinion, their lives were really in danger, because if any of them had been assassinated prior to the opinion being released, I presume it would no longer be a 5-4 situation. If a justice had passed away between the time it was leaked and the time it was released, I don't think it was an official opinion until today. That would have been a 4-4 situation. So that was a time when our justices were in great peril. But as we sit here today, with everyone now knowing that, yes, in fact, that leaked opinion was the opinion, I think that these justices are in further danger. If we have an assassinated Supreme Court justice, Katie bar the door, that is, I'm not sure, I should know this, I'm not a great U.S. historian, I'm not sure that's ever happened. Obviously, we've had presidents assassinated, but these justices need to be protected. They need to be respected for what they did in upholding the rule of law. That's my take on the news, TNT Radio.
The latest headlines waiting for you.
I follow the news pretty much throughout the day.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
And we have General Paul Vallelee with us on the program, Major General in the U.S. Army. Retired in 1991 from the U.S. Army as Deputy Commanding General, U.S. Army Pacific in Honolulu, Hawaii. Welcome to the program, General.
Well, thank you. Thank you for asking me. My pleasure.
Yeah, I think it was General Rod Bishop that brought us together, who has He's of course, Air Force, not Army, but right. He's been doing great work, very concerned about what's going on at the Air Force Academy. So he and I have been in touch for a couple of years about what's going on there. You sounds like you've got similar concerns about what's been going on at your alma mater, West Point.
Well, no, that's right. We've been looking at the whole Department of Defense situation with the mandatory vaccines, the promotion of communist ideology put forth under critical race theory, and a number of things. And then we found out how it had been distributed downward in the ranks and also to the historical institutions of Annapolis, Air Force Academy, and West Point. So we, as concerned graduates of West Point, have been very much on the record in the last month, going not only to the Department of Defense, but to the superintendent and the senior officers at West Point under what we call the concerned graduates of West Point. So we've also today sent a follow-up to the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Mark Milley, and you may remember him when he testified. He said, you know, I'm white and I want to understand what all this white terror is in the ranks. I mean, these generals and admirals of the day have gone so woke, it's beyond imagination.
Yeah. What was the turning point in your opinion? When did the military start going woke?
Well, it really, we track this back to Obama when there was a purge of almost 120 senior officers, colonels and above, out of the ranks then across all the services. So it started from Obama. And of course, we know Obama's running Biden. Biden's only a puppet of Obama now in the White House. So they continue and they have continued to promote these woke, then more junior officers. Now they're four-star admirals and generals. And that's who we have there now, mostly coming out of the Obama era. And we're holding them to bay right now. We're not going to sit back and let the long gray line, which goes back to 1802, founded by George Washington and John Adams, we're not going to let that institution go woke and get away from what we call the historical meaning of the academy. Duty, honor, country. A cadet does not lie, cheat, or steal. And so the long gray line, as we call it, is the assembly of the graduates of the U.S. Military Academy. They're the watchdog, as far as we're concerned, of the U.S. Corps of Cadets. We also have an association of graduates there that have been not monitoring the situation, but more or less raising money from all the graduates for different buildings and different requirements that the superintendent of West Point has laid on as requirements. So they've been in a fundraising effort, but they certainly have not been a watchdog for what the appearance of unlawful behavior on the part of the staff and faculty at West Point. And so I'll be able to, or be happy to delineate some of our concerns if we have the time.
Yeah, well, you know, you sent me this letter earlier today, and my jaw was on the floor reading it. I'm thrilled that this letter has gone out, and it certainly seems to me to be something that is going to get a lot of attention. So I'm just going to start by reading the first couple paragraphs, and then sure. let's go through exactly what we're talking about here. So the long gray line is the assembly of graduates of the United States Military Academy. It serves as a fount of the American battle-tested experience. The institutional memory of the military academy and the watchdog of the United States Corps of Cadets. As such, it is the sacred duty of the long gray line to challenge improper conduct or rogue behavior, such as that which has come to dominate West Point. With these opening words, we addressed our letter of May 24th, 2022 to the superintendent of the military academy, seeking information regarding irregularities, mismanagement, dereliction of duty, in the appearance of unlawful behavior on this part of the staff and the faculty of the academy. Wow. Tell me first, I mean, how significant, in your view, is this letter that was sent?
Well, it has gone viral, as you can expect. Our first one on May 22nd went viral through over 80,000 different graduates of West Point and their families, and parents now that are encouraging their young men and women to go into the academy. And so we're going to go after these evil people and what they're doing. But the honor code, they had a cadet that stole a watch at the PX, and the superintendent, and he was a black football player, but and the superintendent's black, but there's been a partiality there of diversity also being put into the mix rather than choosing cadets based on their skills and experience and their background. And so that diversity element has moved into the military as well as the academies. And we had one young black female, she resigned this year because she wouldn't get vaxxed. And she basically said she couldn't believe it when she went into the academy, how they were promoting the diversities, a separate section for the black women cadets, for example. And she says, I don't want to be part of that. I want to be accepted at West Point based on my qualifications. This is terribly demeaning. And then the critical race theory that's been endorsed by the faculty there at West Point. And, you know, they haven't had one conservative speaker up there that we can track. Every speaker in the last 10 years has been basically a left-wing liberal ideologue for the most part. But no conservative speakers. So, but the vaccine's been a big thing.
I want to tick through those various items.
Sure.
The long gray line, is that an organization or is that just a broad term that applies to alums?
It's a broad term for the alumnus. That's correct. For the alumni.
Okay. So are you writing this? When you write this, you're writing it on your own behalf, or were there a bunch of signatories to this thing, to this letter?
Oh, absolutely. Three of us signed the letter as the principals of what we call the concerned graduates of West Point: Lieutenant General Tom McInerney, U.S. Air Force, myself. I was class of 61. Joe McInerney was class of 59, and Colonel O'Mara. His father was a four-star general graduate of West Point, class of 59. So we have taken the lead, the three of us, representing a long list, I can tell you, the people that are supporting what we're doing.
Mm-hmm. And this was to the superintendent. You're telling me that the superintendent at West Point is black?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
The superintendent at the Air Force Academy is also black?
Mm-hmm. Correct.
And what about Naval Academy?
I'm not sure. I'd have to check it out. And you know,
wouldn't that be fascinating if the person was also black? And you know, we point this out. I don't like pointing out a person's race, but when the left is making it all about race, and we know mm-hmm. that equity, diversity, and inclusion is at the center and core of everything they do, above and beyond everything else, and then you see a black superintendent at least two out of the three academies, you can only assume that the only reason the person is there is because of the color of their skin.
Well, that is, well may be the case, that's for sure. But the fact that you're continuing to push this leftist ideology, this critical race theory through the ranks, I mean, it's destroying morale, it's taking training time away. And this behavior, in our opinion, constitutes unconstitutional conduct, if not sedition. What's happening there? I mean, it is. And then the faculty, I can tell you, West Point, for example, back in the 80s, they started to recruit a lot of assistant professors out of the Ivy League, very left-wing, liberal. Whereas when I was there, almost all the instructors were military uniformed individuals. And that's made a big impact on the faculty at West Point by not having all of the instructors of uniform. Because they went back, got their master's, doctor's degrees. Frank Borman, the famous astronaut, was one of my instructors in aerodynamics, for example. But, you know, if when you will go down the list as you'd like, is spend as much time on the bullet items we put in that letter, if you'd like.
Yeah. I just want to raise something that as we talk about race being in the center of everything. One of my favorite stories, I told Rod Bishop, this is a friend of mine who was at the Academy in the late 1980s. And I'll never forget the story that he told me. And it's just so in opposite to what's going on today. He said that if your commanding officer came to you and said, "Plebe Johnson, how many blacks are in your platoon?" The answer is, "Sir, I don't know, sir." He told me that story, that they were taught to be colorblind at West Point. They were taught to be colorblind at West Point. And now it's the exact opposite. But I mean, that's exactly what you want in our military. "Sir, I don't know, sir. I don't know how many blacks are my platoon. I'm not paying attention to the color of my fellow officers' skin color."
That's correct. That's correct. When I was in Vietnam, 44% of my company in the 101st Airborne Division was either black or Hispanic. It didn't matter to me. They were my soldiers. They were my company. They were in my battalion, my brigade. But that's how
and we've got
Obama. It started under Obama again. You got to blame Obama for instituting this.
And
changing the military forever.
When you are not promoting people based simply on merit, you are putting lives in jeopardy. You're putting America's security in jeopardy. But this is what's going on. I mean, there's no doubt that there is major, major affirmative action going on, meaning decisions made regarding promotions based on color of skin rather than merit. It's widespread. It's happening in admissions. It's happening within the universities. It's happening outside of it. Not just based on race, by the way, based on sex. And this has to be impacting the readiness of our military.
Well, it is. Recruiting's down. Morale's down. We have suits on because of the mandatory vaccine suits throughout the armed forces. There was a court 3 weeks ago. It stood tall and supported several of the Navy people who had suits against the Navy for mandatory vaccine and booster shots when they were seeing the negative effects now coming from the vaccines and the boosters. So our enemies see this. The cartels see this. The Russians, the Chinese. They see a weakening of American military. And guess what they're going to do? They're going to take advantage of it.
Am I stretching things to say that the debacle that was our exit from Afghanistan could very well be because of a military that it no longer has the readiness that it had 20 years ago because of all this nonsense, including affirmative action and wokeness? Is that going too far?
No, it's not too far. It's sedition. It's traitors aiding and abetting the enemy, which was the Taliban, $85 billion worth of equipment. That's treason in itself, abetting an enemy. And then you have that withdrawal. It was an embarrassment within the ranks. I can tell you by talking and getting emails from many of the people in the ranks, totally embarrassed by the lack of resolve of the Defense Secretary, Gordon Austin, Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Mark Milley, making excuses and supporting the inept Biden presidency, rather than advising him, "Mr. President, we cannot do this. We cannot give away $85 billion worth of valuable military equipment to the Taliban." And I forecasted when that happened. I said, "You watch, the Chinese are going to move into Bagram Air Force Base and take it over." Guess what happened? 2 weeks later, the Chinese were at Bagram, had moved in, taken over almost all of that equipment and advising the Taliban, part of their Silk Belt Road initiative. So if when you connect the dots that we do at the Stand Up America U.S. Foundation, we're able to pull these together better than our administration can do it. I mean, the ineptness now the ineptness within the Biden administration is just beyond comprehension.
I was not aware. Maybe I missed the reporting, or maybe there hasn't been a lot of reporting on that, but I was not aware of the Chinese going to Bagram. What I had heard, and people being critical, is like, this was a very, very secure base, and there would be absolutely no reason not to continue to maintain that base. That's what I heard, which was very disconcerting in and of itself. I hadn't heard this thing about the Chinese.
Yeah, very much.
Is this widely reported, or is this something you only know through your connections?
After I went national on a radio show, our camera was radio TV, that I said, you watch, because our foundation has done 22 analytical and thesis on the Chinese Communist Party. So we've been tracking the Chinese and everything they've been doing in Pakistan, the roads, the new ports, the airfields that the Chinese have put in. So we knew their next move was Afghanistan once we pulled out. It was obvious if you connected the dots, but the CIA didn't connect the dots. None of the military intelligence agencies connected the dots, but the foundation, our foundation, did. We connected the dots and we went public with it.
And as we speak today, what are the Chinese doing in Afghanistan and at that base, to the extent you know?
Well, if you study the Silk Belt Road Initiative, it goes all the way from China, across the Middle East, into Africa, up through the Middle East, and their influence on all of these nations, acquiring, very precious minerals that they need to sustain their military, their economy. The Chinese are just absolutely brilliant at deception. As well as being able to move into an area. They've completely infiltrated America. We've done, five studies alone on the infiltration into our universities, into our military, into our high-tech companies, into Wall Street. I mean, it's unbelievable. And if you read Peter Schweitzer's book, 28 members of our Congress have been bought by the Chinese. So it was
okay.
You're too brilliant to connect the dots.
Yeah. All right. We got to take a break. When we come back, we'll start ticking through this letter and some of the things that you're pointing out that are so upsetting going on at our military academy. You're listening to the James Breslow program on TNT Radio.
God, you're amazing. You're a much better listener than my wife. You're always there for me. I think I may be in love.
Where is she?
It's not what it seems. I was talking
to... Who's the tramp I heard you talking to?
That was my Alexa, sweetie.
Well, she sounds like a tramp.
Fall in love with news and talk all over again with your smart device. Just tell it to play.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
One of the best things about Freedom Fest is while you can go to other places to talk about liberty and things like that, here you find a diverse group of people who will always teach you something new and make you think differently about the liberty movement.
There are all kinds of vendors here, all kinds of electeds. There are speakers, celebrities. We all have one thing in common. We think that there's too much government, and we think that our personal freedoms have eroded over time.
Don't miss Freedom Fest,
the largest liberty event of the year.
July 13th to 16th at the Mirage in Las Vegas. For more information, go to freedomfest.com.
Mask mandates don't work.
No.
We mandate that the truth be told.
Let's do it.
Today's News Talk Radio,
TNT.
And we are back on the James Breslow Show, talking to Paul Vallely, Major General Vallely. That makes it easier.
There you go.
I knew I was going to stumble on your last name at some point. Vallely, Major General, U.S. Army, retired in 1991 from the U.S. Army as Deputy Commanding General, U.S. Army Pacific in Honolulu, Hawaii. Was that your favorite post of your career, by the way?
No, actually, Germany was. When I was with the 82nd Airborne, 505th Airborne Battle Group in Germany in the early 60s at the height of the Cold War. Yeah, that was my favorite assignment.
Well, it's an impressive career, and thank you, obviously, for everything you've done for our country. Before I go back to the letter, I am curious, we've talked about Austin and Milley, the two generals right now, one Secretary of Defense, and the other holds what post? Remind me.
The Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff.
Chairman of Joint Chiefs. You must know these guys personally. What do you think of them being in these positions? Are these guys the right guys for these jobs?
They're totally inept. What more can I say?
Is that based on is that based on personal experience, that you have personal experience with them?
It's based on them, their performance. General Patton, General MacArthur, General Eisenhower, they turn over their graves. I was mentored by the World War II colonels and generals in the 50s when I went to West Point. And I can tell you, these generals and admirals we have today, they're not what we used to have. They're just totally politicized. It's horrible what's happened to them.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, to be promoted in today's military, I mean, you got to sign up for equity, diversity, and inclusion. You got to be all about that. I mean, it seems to me it's got to be the center of everything that you do, right?
Well, you got to be in line with the left-wing ideologues. Beginning with, again, track it back to Obama. Trump tried to straighten it out, but didn't complete it. He would have been in his second term. But certainly, even Trump, and we tried to tell him, he had a bunch of woke generals and admirals that were working for him. Even the Secretary of Defense, Esper, left-wing guy that he put in. And then to keep Milley in there, when he knew Milley was inept, I don't know whether you recall when they were going to St. James Church across from the White House, and Milley was in his fatigues there walking next to President Trump, and next day he comes out and apologizes that he shouldn't have been there with Trump. Trump should have fired him immediately. But Trump didn't do the job of cleaning up the swamp the way we wanted him to, particularly in the military.
Yeah, that was one of the I mean, on the one hand, Trump was up for the task of wanting to clean out the swamp. But I think being so new and, you know, having no experience there, things moved pretty very slowly as far as a lot of his appointments and so on. He was probably just starting to get his feet under him at the end of the 4 years. And so missing out on that second term was pretty devastating for us.
Yep, we're seeing the results of it now.
Yeah. So we need somebody to come in new and spend 8 years in that position. I'm certainly hoping that it is DeSantis. He seems to be making some progress of late. I don't know. I trust DeSantis with the job more than I do Trump at this point.
Yeah, I'm liking DeSantis. I know Ron. I've known him for years, and he's really up to it. We're trying to get now 14 of the governors to get behind the 10th Amendment and forge an alliance called the Free States of America, Free States of America, as a takeoff from the red states. And we're trying to get them now to utilize the 10th Amendment, states' rights versus federal rights, and deny all these illegal and illicit directives coming down from Biden in the White House. Abbott could be doing a lot more on the border, for example. And here's another interesting thing I'll point out to you. I've written three border plans for Trump and for the Pentagon on neutralizing the cartels. The Pentagon has no plans. Cartels are a national security threat, not only an immigration support threat, but they're militarized. The cartels are responsible for killing more people than we've lost in the Middle East in 20 years. Yet our Defense Department has no plans to take them out. Isn't that amazing? Mm.
Well, when you say plans to take them out,
story on that sometime.
Well, as a matter of fact, I've done two episodes this week on the cartels, and it's very disconcerting. You've got a Mexican president that's no friend of America and is allowing the cartels to run wild. So they're bigger than ever, and our border is more open than ever. So I'm very concerned about the extent to which the cartels are conducting business in the U.S. But when you say a plan to take them out, what would that plan look like?
Well, I'm going to send it to you. It's basically a special ops plan. It's the use of our Navy SEALs, special forces. It's a clandestine covert operation. General Boykin and I could plan it and have it executed. We can take the cartels out in 7 days. We watch them for a month overhead with our drones and with our satellites. And of course, we know in our plan, I've already tracked where the six cartels are located. And so we watch them and then we take them out. 7 days, they're done.
Yeah, I've never heard anyone suggest that idea. I my natural reaction is to love the idea. Would you give them any bit of warning?
No, that's what a clandestine operation is. No warning. All of a sudden, at 2 o'clock in the morning, they're taken out. They're done at 2 o'clock in the morning. That's when I do my special ops operations, early in the morning, 2 o'clock.
And tell me about international law as it applies to this operation. Any concerns? What kind of approval? We need the Mexican government to support it, don't we?
No, we don't. Okay, let me track you back. Some of the feedback I've gotten even from senior officers, that's a cross-border operation. I said, what do you think Vietnam was? What do you think Iraq was? What do you think Syria was? What do you think Afghanistan was? Cross-border operation. Did we care whether it was legal or illegal? No, we just did it. Now, here's right on our border, 100 miles south. Okay, so soak that up and think about what I just said. Of course, if it's a threat against the United States, we take it out. We're not looking for any support from international law. We're determined to neutralize and take down a threat to America and to American citizens. There you go.
Mm-hmm. What about U.S. law? Wouldn't you need this authorized by Congress?
Are you kidding me? We didn't do it in Vietnam.
Vietnam never had congressional authorization? Wow.
Well, they funded it. No, it was never declared a war by Congress. Either was anything in the Middle East. There was never a declaration of war.
When was the last time Congress declared war?
World War II.
Really?
And then, of course, Korea was a peace. It was an agreement there. No, but back in our history, the legality.
I mean, talk about the Constitution. I think it is in the Constitution that Congress has the power to declare war. Pretty stunning.
That's right.
The number of wars we've had.
Track it back. There's no war declared for the Middle East.
You're saying there's no war been declared in the past 70 years.
Think about what they call it, the war against terror, right? Remember that? But there is no declaration of war by Congress.
Yeah, that's incredible. I think it's gotten to the point where that should be on the table. You're going to need a President DeSantis to implement something like that. Yeah. But
I was just going to say there are Marines like the Mexican Special Forces and the Marinas. They're very close hold. They could do it, but you could never tell the Mexican government you were going to do it. Because they're aligned with the cartels, many of them. So it's got to be a quick down and dirty 2 o'clock in the morning takedown, and it's over. What's the Mexican government going to do about it?
It would be good for America. It would be good for America, and it would be good for Mexico to finally break them of this.
That's correct.
Yeah, this poor country, I mean, they're screwed. They've got no way out right now. That is, frankly, their only hope. They should be embracing it. And, maybe it could be the beginning of genuine change in Central America, because things are just getting worse and worse south of our border. Talk about, you know, Kamala Harris wants to address the root causes. Well, the root causes are socialist dictators. Those are the root causes. And we need to get a healthy bit of free market capitalism happening down there.
Yeah, you also should do a show on Canada, where the Chinese and the cartels are operating very heavily north of our border. And then we've got Fidel Castro's son, Justin Trudeau's the head of Canada. I don't know whether you knew that or not.
well, I knew he was the head of Canada. That part I knew.
Oh, his father. We have the whole bio to take. You can Google it. Margaret Trudeau, who is Justin's mother. His father was Pierre Trudeau. But Margaret was traveling to Cuba quite a bit, had an affair over 2 to 3 years with Fidel. And one of her last trips there, she got pregnant, had Trudeau, Justin, 9 months later. And then when Justin was about 6 months old, she takes him back to Cuba to meet his real father. Google it. You'll see the pictures. And biologically, they're duplicates at 19 years old. He looks nothing like Pierre Trudeau. Anyhow, a lot of people don't know that. There's some good intel for you today.
Well, I've certainly heard the rumors. I didn't realize that it's as confirmed as you stated is. But my prior guest was talking about Falun Gong in China in organ harvesting, and he certainly had some choice words for Trudeau and suggesting that China exerts a lot of influence in Canada.
Yeah, tremendous. Yeah.
So going back to West Point, so you guys articulate a number of things that are going on there. So maybe we'll just tick them off and you could hit the highlights for me. But number one, and I assume there's a reason you put it as one, is presumably what you consider to be the most important. You demand an explanation for the irregularities in the enforcement of the honor code.
Well, yeah, that's one of the big ones. And I really didn't understand that was going on as much until I was made aware of it by the interviews to some of the cadets that were there. But duty, honor, country, we had the cadets, so when I was there, the cadets ran the honor code. And if anybody was caught lying, cheating, or stealing, they would be presented to the honor committee, and they would be basically thrown out of the academy. But now they have, they've bring lawyers in. And there's been several, I don't know how many, honor code violations, but they've never left the academy. Basically, the superintendent's supposed to take the honor committee's code or their actions and go forth with it. But so there's been a complete, devaluation of the honor code at West Point. And the cadets know it, by the way.
And then you have this enforcement of the COVID vax mandate still today, despite the fact that we're well over 2 years into this thing, been pretty much proven that the vaccines are of limited value, yet still it appears to me to be a method of purging from the military independent thinkers by kicking out those who refuse to get the vaccine.
Well, that's right. They're not abiding by the First Amendment rights, religious freedom. That's been horrible up there. These are the healthiest kids we have in the country, if COVID comes down, and none of them really now. It's almost nebula. I mean, very low rates among the cadets or midshipmen today, and certainly hydroxychloroquine, ivermectin, can take care if they come down with a little bit. But the whole thing of it is they're not given a choice, and they're putting these poisons into their body, which now are affecting their ability. I mean, the amount of deaths we have now and injuries from myocarditis to other things that are happening with pilots and so on. And General Bishop and I are working very closely on that. But the other one's critical race theory. We've talked about that. Terrible food, I guess. Again, the football players are getting their own cuisine in the dining facility. When I was there, the football players and athletes did eat separately. But we got a report. The cadets were spending almost $6.5 million in the town outside of West Point called Highland Falls because they were getting inadequate food. So they were ordering pizzas, sandwiches to complement their diet. I mean, that is horrible. They found flies, unsanitary conditions in the mess hall, and they completely ignored it. So we wanted to point that out to the chief of staff of the Army and the chairman of the Joint Chiefs. And then we talked a little bit about political activism coming from the civilian faculty members who, in essence, came from a lot of the Ivy League colleges. And they're of course, pushing forward critical race theory and diversity and so on in the social programs. You don't do that in math or physics or chemistry, you know. That's pretty solid science stuff. But where they take it to the nth degree is in the social science academic part of the curriculums. And then FOIA requests, some may have been sent to the superintendent, but just like Department of Defense, they completely ignore them. Freedom of Information.
Yeah. Yeah, and you've got the political activism. I know at the Air Force Academy, the speaker at the most important event they have every year, I think it was when the students come back to school, George Takei, the infamous leftist gay activist, Trump hater, I don't think he even served in the military, was the primary speaker, and the recommended book for everyone to read, if not mandatory, was a cartoon book that he had put together. And it was all about the internment of the Japanese during World War II. And, the overall point being that, you know, America's made all these mistakes in the past, and not sure ultimately what the message was supposed to be, but this was supposed to be the inspirational speaker to the incoming class at the Air Force Academy is George Takei, the Star Trek star.
Yeah, what an embarrassment.
Total embarrassment. All right, we got to take a break. We'll be back with more on the James Bressel Show on TNT Radio.
Climate change. Is there anything it can't do? You won't believe this next story.
From Washington, D.C., this is the Marano Minute with your host, TNT Radio's Mark Marano.
National Public Radio is reporting there's a nationwide sriracha shortage and climate change may be to blame. Sriracha sauce is very spicy. NPR explains that it's made from a special type of pepper that only grows in certain parts of Mexico and the U.S., and they have faced drought. Ergo, climate change is causing a shortage. But wait, there's more. Another study says climate change is making sharks right-handed and deadlier. Australian scientists have found that sharks will swim to the right due to warming ocean waters. In addition, a climate modeling study claims clashes between humans and lions will increase due to climate change. But wait, there's more. Quote, ketchup at risk from climate change, according to the UK Telegraph. Now will you support carbon taxes and the Green New Deal to save ketchup, sriracha, and prevent lions from attacking you and sharks swimming to the right? This is the wacky world of climate change. For the Marano Minute, this is Mark Marano on TNT Radio.
The journey of 1,000 miles begins with the first step. At Children International, we know that the journey to end poverty for good begins first with a child. It starts with their first checkup, lesson, opportunity, job. That journey takes commitment from people like you and me to end poverty for good. Learn more at children.org.
Challenging the consensus and debunking the narrative. This is Viewpoint.
Don't be fooled by so-called green steel made by using hydrogen rather than coal. This fraud will force up the price of steel for no environmental gain. Moving to unproven hydrogen technology will require expensive refits or replacement of steel manufacturing infrastructure. Since steel is used widely in construction and manufacturing, the costs will be enormous, just to satisfy nonsense net zero carbon goals, which denies nature-enhanced photosynthesis from the gas of life. The critics are not just conservatives. Jenny George, former Labour MP and president of the Australian Council of Trade Unions, has described the net zero emissions approach as a region's job killer, has scorned the false promises of green tech energy and ridiculed, quote, the mantra of green steel, unquote. The World Economic Forum backs the Net Zero Steel Initiative through its Mission Possible partnership. This threatens steel producers who don't swallow the net carbon zero swindle.
Mask mandates don't work.
No.
We mandate that the truth be told.
Let's do it.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
And welcome back to the James Breslow Show. We're in the final 10 minutes here on a Friday with our fabulous guest, retired Major General Paul Vallely, with us. Did I pronounce it right that time, General?
That's correct. Thank you.
I'm going to throw you a curveball, perhaps, and you can disavow this if you want, because I saw some reference to the term a global shadow government. Global shadow government. Is that something that you believe exists?
Absolutely. We know it exists.
All right. All right. Well, then let's jump in, because, you know, I heard lots of people use that term similar, et cetera. But I honestly have never had a retired major general use that term. And I think it has more credibility coming from you. So I really want to hear your thoughts on what about this global shadow government.
Well, we go in detail in our two new books that are coming out, Reality Prism and America's Endgame for the 21st Century, which are on Amazon. And we go into a whole chapter on the global shadow government. And these are the same people we track back from several decades that have been the ruling wealthy, for example, in Europe. We've been able to pinpoint now almost, I think, 38 members of the global elitist, as they're called. These are the same people that go to Davos every year. You can track them in their jets, who they are. Bill Gates, of course, is one of them. Ted Bezos is the other one. They are also the members of our new high-tech oligarchs, Zuckerberg and so on. But these people really, as outlined by their leader, Klaus Schwab, not Charles Schwab, Klaus Schwab, they control the World Health Organization. They control basically many of the companies on Wall Street, European financial banks. These are the wealthiest. And if you look back through history, and I'd be happy to send you a whole chapter on them that explains in much detail. This is not what I created. This is based on analysis and intelligence we've been able to gather, particularly over the last 2 to 3 years, on the more current members of the global elitist. And so,
which has been.
Go ahead.
How long would you say this global shadow government has been around?
Oh, boy, 3 or 4 decades.
And is this something that the United States military or intelligence services look into and report upon?
No, they don't.
Why not?
Because they're bought off. Macron, for example, bought off in France. Trudeau bought off. Biden bought off. They control that. George Soros is one of them, for example. But
now, to call it a government, obviously, is right. Using the term very loosely. It seems to me that I'm certainly willing to believe that there is a group that attempts to exert influence around the world and try to implement things to its benefit. But to the extent that it actually controls things is a different question, because takes a lot. So to what?
They control it through money. And that's what it's for. They want a one world government, for example. They want the World Health Organization to basically control all health in the world. They don't believe in borders. They want borderless countries. And we can see what happened in Europe with Schengen when they put that in. You can see the proponents of it, of trying to destroy our northern border and southern border. They basically, they're control freaks. And, you know, Bill Gates has come out and said they wanted, he wants to depopulate the world. That's part of their plan. But I think if I send you the background, you'll understand it more. And this has been put together by some brilliant minds who have been following it versus our intelligence agencies.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I think there's people that are part of it and then people that kind of just go along or don't try to oppose it. In particular, Mark Zuckerberg, I've got it on good authority that Zuckerberg is a libertarian. I don't think that he really buys into a bunch of the stuff that we think he buys into, but because of his position and the company and so on, that he essentially has to. A combination, in my view, of him catering to his woke Gen X employees, but also perhaps to get along with the Davos boys.
Well, no, that's exactly right. And they don't believe in our Constitution. As you can see, they don't believe in First Amendment rights at all. Of course, they don't buy into the Second Amendment because that would be a defense against them. But they're working very, very hard each and every day. And their last meeting in Davos, if you, I have a record of everybody that attended there, and they're led by Klaus Schwab. You have to do a Google of Klaus Schwab and you'll get a lot of information on where he's coming from on this one world domination government. Mm-hmm. He explains it very well. Just Google him, Klaus Schwab.
Yeah. Well, and part of it, in order to implement anything that would be global, who's the global power right now? We're hanging on by a thread, perhaps, but it's still the United States of America. So you need to take America down a few pegs if you're going to implement something like that.
Yeah, and that's what they've done. They've done it in a year and a half.
Yeah. Well, they did it for 8 years under Obama, and then there's a pause, and now it's starting again. But
Guess who's fighting it more than anybody? You won't believe it. Putin.
Putin is fighting against the global shadow government? Uh-huh.
Absolutely. Yeah, he's one of the biggest proponents and understands all of them. And that's an amazing insight that Putin has. And that's why the continued pressure on Ukraine to try to win that war over there. I mean, there's a lot of things going on over there that the public isn't, I guess it doesn't have access to that kind of information. But
In our final,
Putin will take him out if he can. That's for sure.
We got about 2 minutes left. I did mention that we might talk on Russia, Ukraine. I was raising in the prior hour this question about Tucker Carlson and why he seems to not be very supportive of our involvement in Ukraine. And it does seem to me to believe that that is kind of the line, that there's some people that see Putin fighting against that global elite, that Zelensky is part of it. And that's kind of why they oppose the U.S. involvement. Is that your...
Yeah.
Read on
exactly.
It?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Okay. And therefore what though? What should the U.S. be doing about Russia's invasion of Ukraine?
Pressing for a meeting of the minds. If Trump was in charge, he would have met with Putin. They would have ensured Ukraine was not going to be pushed into being a NATO nation. Putin came out and said, I have no NATO nation on my border like that. And he made that warning. And he understood that Zelensky was run by the Azovs, the Nazi carryovers from World War II, who really run the government in Ukraine. One of the most corrupt governments in the world, has been and still is. And Eastern Ukraine, mostly very pro-Russian, The Azovs have killed thousands of Eastern Ukrainians in the Donetsk area of Eastern Ukraine. Putin knew that. And that's why many of them have rushed to get Russian passports now and so on. But that's our analysis.
Yeah, but still, you're not defending Putin's wholesale invasion of an attempt to take over Ukraine.
No. I mean, it could have been done by other means, but it's not all his fault is what I'm saying. NATO should have realized it. If Biden was smart enough, he would have realized it. They would have met with Putin. I'm the one that set up the first meeting between Putin and Trump. I don't know whether you knew that.
No, I didn't know that. We're going to have you back on because we're out of time this hour. But thank you so much, General, for your time. Check out Stand Up America, Stand Up America U.S. Foundation. General Paul Vallely, we appreciate your time and coming on the program. Have a great weekend.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you all for listening to the James Breslow Show. That's all for me. We'll come back to you on Monday on TNT Radio. Have a great weekend, everyone.